Infamous Indy presents The Digging Up Dillinger Project, featuring the Texas Crime Travelers and Travis Thompson. I'm your host, Joe Malillo. In the annals of American crime, few figures loom as large as John Dillinger. A mastermind of bank heists, his name became synonymous with brazen robberies and daring escapes. Questions of whether he escaped an FBI ambush and the whereabouts of his buried loot persevere. History offers one account, but there are whispers that tell us many more. Join us as we go digging up Dillinger. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Digging Up Dillinger, another episode. But this time you only get me, Joe Malillo, the host, because I have a special interview. We're doing it at a different time. And the guys, the other part of the gang, they can't make it today. So I'm here right now, live, with Paul McAbee, who is the author of his book, John Dillinger Slept Here, A Crook's Tour of Crime and Corruption in St. Paul. Paul, what's up, man? Thanks for joining me from Minneapolis.
Great to meet you. Great to be on your show.
Thank you. Yeah, my show. The podcast show. We are up to about 24, 25 episodes, so we're really cooking.
Oh, my God.
As you know, we kind of spoke briefly. I just reached out to you because, hey, I saw you wrote this book. Stuart has read this book. He was really interested in it. And listen, in this show and our investigation, we're breaking history here. We have to take all angles and put it in front of our listeners and viewers so that they can make the decisions on whether or not John Dillinger actually escaped his own death, which is a crazy sentence to say, where his money is. So maybe you can help us on our journey. What do you think?
I would love that. And I'm talking to you from St. Paul.
Yeah, excuse me. Yeah, the big difference.
Yeah, really.
So sorry.
No, which was historically the safe city for every gangster in America. So was Cicero, Illinois, which is Al Capone's territory. Hot Springs, Arkansas, which the fix was in. The mob owned Hot Springs. And St. Paul. And it was basically the cops, the police, were totally corrupt.
Yep.
And the underworld and the overworld, as it were totally mixed together. And the people of St. Paul would see John Dillinger in a restaurant. He was public enemy number one, according to J. Edgar Hoover. And you wouldn't be upset. I mean, here's this bank robber.
Sure. Yeah.
A few feet away from you. But you knew the
celebrity
within. Because as long as Dillinger is in St. Paul, he's safe. He won't be arrested. He won't be extradited. He can rob a bank in Milwaukee. But then when he comes to St. Paul, he has to be on his best behavior, which is why Dillinger called, of all places, St. Paul, Minnesota, his home for more than a year and a half.
Yeah. And it's funny because we've talked about on this episode, on another episode, about him having a shootout in St. Paul. And you say, wait a second.
Yeah.
Why was he so safe if he had a shootout in St. Paul? But I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the answer is because the FBI ran that investigation and got the tip and ran after it. Is that right?
Yes. Although correct, Joe. Although one wrinkle is the FBI didn't have the power at the time to arrest, so they had to bring along a St. Paul police officer with them in order to arrest him. But you're absolutely right. It wasn't the cops. It was the FBI. And of course, Dillinger escaped. When John Dillinger escaped from the Lincoln Court apartments in St. Paul, it was so embarrassing to the Bureau, to the FBI, that there were calls for J. Edgar Hoover to resign his post as director. The Society of American Magicians gave John Dillinger its Harry Houdini Award for escaping from the Lincoln Court apartments in St. Paul.
Isn't
so
that great?
It was a terrible humiliation.
What a terrible, yeah.
And of course, then you have Little Bohemia. So, you know, we could talk about this later, but the pressure on the FBI to get Dillinger was just enormous.
Oh, no, that is a running theme throughout our podcast, how it is really kind of the biggest theme. One of the biggest theories that we've talked about is the motivation behind him faking his own death and or working with the FBI to have the FBI help him fake his own death. Because one of two things happened. They shot and killed the guy, and he's sitting there on the ground, and it's not John Dillinger. Now what do you do? Or they worked it out with John to say, hey, to make sure we don't all have embarrassment here, we're going to work out a deal with you where we'll let you go, but we're going to have somebody stand in for you. Those are kind of theories that we've talked about. But yes, the idea that FBI would do anything to make sure that John didn't
like it. And Joe, I have to add, I've read, you know, J. Robert Nash and read about the changes in the body in the morgue.
Sure. Yep.
That didn't seem to match. My personal feeling is that most likely John Dillinger was killed in front of the Biograph Theater. I've read the FBI files on the killing of Dillinger.
Sure.
And keep in mind, the FBI files that you and your listeners can look at. You just go to the FBI building. They have their FOI.
Now you don't even have to go there anymore. You just go to their website. It's on their website. Hundreds of thousands of pages.
Right. And Hoover and the other leadership of the FBI, they never expected that the files would be released to the public. Mm-hmm. So the files are pretty raw. J. Edgar Hoover scribbles stuff in the margins. He says, those awful guys can't do this.
You're afraid to swear?
But yeah, really.
You go ahead. Go ahead.
But there's nothing in the files. You know, you would say, well, if they collaborated with Dillinger, it wouldn't be in the files. But there's nothing in the files that would indicate anything other than Dillinger being killed. Jack Hamilton, his best friend,
there we go,
and machine gunner, that's a different story.
Oh, I love the lead in. This is what we call a tease in the business. We lead right into what we're going to talk about today. So there's a couple things. Let's just go over a little bit. You spent 12 years researching your book. Again, it's called John Dillinger Slept Here, A Crook's Tour of Crime and Corruption in St. Paul. You can go on Amazon. You can go get it right now.
Go right now. Buy two copies. Yes.
You looked at those thousands and thousands of files of FBI files that were released. And you had interviews with, you know, there's interviews with more than 200 police officers, gun malls, which are, what are they? Were there women? They're like the
girlfriends. And I'll tell you what. The reason I wrote the book, I'm not from Minnesota. I'm from Boston.
Okay.
So when I moved here, I was a journalist like you, Joe. And someone ran into the newsroom and said, the Godfather is dead. The Godfather in Minnesota just died. And I thought, you got to be kidding. I knew Minnesota as Bob Dylan, Prince, and maybe F. Scott Fitzgerald.
Yeah, word.
And
yeah.
Garrison Keillor. But no, we had organized crime in Minnesota. And then people told me, well, don't you know John Dillinger lived here?
Hey,
Babyface Nelson, Creepy Carpus, they all came to St. Paul. And I figured the good people of St. Paul, our parents, grandparents, whatever, they couldn't have known that all these notorious bank robbers were hanging out there. But of course they were, because the fix, they called it the layover agreement. So Dillinger would lay over in St. Paul until the heat was off for a bank robbery in Iowa or Wisconsin. So this was a safe city. If you wanted a gun, a machine gun, you'd go to St. Paul. They would fly them in from Texas. If you wanted to launder bank loot, you went to St. Paul. You could launder the money. If you wanted a girl, Alvin Karpus met the love of his life and the mother eventually of his child when he was in prison here in St. Paul. So it was this was like a Walmart for the Dillinger gang.
I love
it. Anything they wanted. And by the way, if the Dillinger gang needed a getaway car, on University Avenue, the main drag of St. Paul, you could go to an auto dealership and buy a getaway car. Getaway meaning heavily armored on the side, a police radio pre-installed so you know if the police knew it. And if the police said your license plate number, the plates had quick release lug nuts so you could switch your license plate out if you knew the cops were after you. So it's no accident that Dillinger came to St. Paul.
I love it. This is all relatively new to me. I mean, these are, you know, we do so much research. You hear like the outside story, but this is great. You're an expert. And so St. Paul, for him to be there, right? Because obviously he had that shootout and he actually got shot in St. Paul. Were there doctors in St. Paul that he would have used?
Yeah, there was. So good question. Not only could you get a getaway car, mm-hmm. not only could you get a machine gun, but if you either had a venereal disease and they all got syphilis and gonorrhea, if you had a venereal disease or your girlfriend, your gun mall, needed an abortion, there were gangland doctors who specialized in bullet wounds and other side effects of living a life of crime. So yeah, Dillinger was wounded, not mortally, obviously,
sure.
but Dillinger was wounded in the shootout at the Lincoln Court Apartments.
The Lincoln Court Apartments. Has there any research or any like investigation into the walls to maybe see if there's any money that was hidden in these walls or?
You know, great question, Joe. Every time I knocked on the door of someone who lives in a building that used to be a Dillinger gang hideout or the Barker Karpus gang is the other big gang at the time in the 30s, they would tell me when they moved in, they would bang on the walls, they would stomp on the floors because the bank loot, most of the bank loot that Dillinger stole was never found. The kidnap ransom of the Barker Karpus gang, when they kidnapped two of the wealthiest men in St. Paul, Billy Hamm and Ed Bremer, for $300,000 in ransom. You can imagine what that would be worth today.
Yeah.
Not a penny of that. Not a penny.
And it was cash?
Has ever been found. It was in cash. To be honest with you, if you found it today, wherever, whatever can they put it in, it would probably be liquefied.
Sure, yeah.
And it would be evidence, so you couldn't keep it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, our journey with Travis, at least, and the Thompsons, we're pretty clear that if we ever found the money, we're just going to return it. We just want to find it. And especially bail bonds and stuff. We believe on our podcast that I'll speak for myself because I'm here, but that the bonds are what would be left over, that the cash was spent during their time gallivanting around the country robbing. And so, you know, using cash on hand is probably their first go-to. So they're going to rob so that they can live. And then the bonds maybe were stored somewhere else. There's a couple of places in Indianapolis, but, you know, since we're on this vein, I want to keep going on it, if it's okay with you, Paul.
Yeah.
Have there ever been any reports of money loot found in St. Paul?
No, however.
Tell me that. How is that possible? out of here.
We'll get back to that. How is it possible? So in addition to the getaway car dealers, the machine gun dealers, all those services for you, Joe Melillo, the bank robber, they also had money launderers.
You want to make me create a video game about this now. I feel like a VR video game would be great. Joe Melillo, the gangster. Keep going.
It would be great. And you'd have to launder the money that you got from the video game.
Yeah.
So when the Denver Mint, this is like 1929 or something like that, 1928, when the Denver Mint was robbed, and it was like, at the time, it was like, holy moly,
they robbed
the Denver Mint. It's like Goldfinger, you know, or something like that. The money was not found, I believe, but it was traced to St. Paul, where it was laundered. My understanding is that it would go from St. Paul to the racetrack in Florida, in California, and they would launder it at the track.
Well, that makes a lot of sense.
But the money's never been found. Now, there is a rumor.
How would you identify? Do you know how you would identify the money?
No.
No, me neither. That's a Stewart question.
Right.
That's a Stewart. Stewart would know that. Okay, next.
One of the guys that was kidnapped in St. Paul by the Barker Karpus gang, which was separate, interestingly enough, from Dillinger. The two gangs, except for burying a guy together. They never really worked together. But the Barker Karpus gang's $100,000 ransom for kidnapping Billy Ham, one of the richest men in the world, allegedly it was put into a tin can, put under a wooden fence.
$300,000?
Well, it was $100,000. Oh. It was a portion of that. In Zumbrota, Minnesota. And apparently, if you drive through Zumbrota, you'll see guys with metal detectors trying to find the can. And again, after three quarters of a century,
It would have to be really sealed up.
It would be mud. Yeah, it would be mud. But still, still looking for it.
So, in that vein, did I tell you they found a map on the property? They found John Dillinger shell map with his DNA on it.
Oh my.
With an indelible pencil. I'll show it to you. Because it's on an episode. If you want to go back and listen to the episode called The Map on our Digging Up Dillinger podcast.
Oh my God.
It's on YouTube too. So you can look, but we actually found a map and it has dates and a route. But you know, the running theory is that he left that map in a ball jar, which by the way was sealed. And the only reason we found it was because Stewart was digging and he cracked the ball jar. And he heard glass when they were digging after doing ground penetrating radar.
Yeah.
And they found it. And they were like, oh my God. So literally we took out and it was sealed perfectly. And like no water was gotten in. And it'd been under a root and it's been, you know, 90 years, almost 80 years when they found it.
Incredible.
I know. So you got to hope for that, for the money. And those guys, those poor guys, I'd love to go out there and do that. I'd love to come out there and actually I have a metal detector downstairs. I'll go do it tomorrow.
Bring the metal detector, and then you get to visit the Mall of America.
I don't need to go there again.
You don't need to go there, and you get to go to Prince's house.
So. Yeah, word. Yeah, Prince's house. I'd go see Minnesota Vikings play. They're pretty good. Oh, I like Sam Darnold.
Let's talk about Jack Hamilton for a minute.
Yeah, let's go into that a little bit. Just from the perspective of who Jack Hamilton was. He was one of the gang members, right? He was John Dillinger's bunny.
He got along well with John Dillinger. Dillinger lied about Jack. He was known as Three Finger Jack Hamilton because he had two fingers amputated or allegedly cut off in a domestic fight that he had with his wife. Dillinger lied saying, oh yeah, Jack died.
When Red, in fact, Jack had Red not Hamilton.
Died. So, yeah. It shows that they were pretty close. After Little Bohemia, they raced towards St. Paul because they had to get to safety. A bullet pierced Dillinger's car, hit Jack Hamilton, blood all over the car. And according to the FBI, the Dillinger gang buried Jack Hamilton in an unmarked grave. But I talked to Jack Hamilton's nephew.
Really?
And Jack Hamilton's nephew said, no, he didn't die. Jack Hamilton of the Dillinger gang never died. It was another corpse that was disfigured with lye. They took away his teeth because he could have been identified by his teeth. Yeah. And he said, we would have family gatherings like for Christmas, Thanksgiving, and Jack Hamilton would be there.
That's insane.
And all the relatives knew, oh yeah, that's Uncle Jack over there. He used to be with John Dillinger. So I find that fascinating. You know, it's relatively credible. Are we being joined by
Jack Hamilton?
Oh, there's Jack. So, and there's rumors, you know, apparently Melvin Purvis, you know who Melvin Purvis was, of course.
Sure. Yeah.
Melvin Purvis said someone came up to him and said, well, Jack Hamilton didn't die after the Little Bohemia raid. And look, here's a photo. And the photo was of a guy with two fingers missing. But according to Purvis, well, maybe they were covering up the two fingers. So Purvis didn't believe that Jack Hamilton had escaped.
I mean,
so you could decide, did the FBI not want to believe
that
any of these public enemies?
Oh, they got them all. Yeah, they got them all. Why would they investigate it too? That's funny. And the FBI files, were there any discussions about looking for Jack Hamilton later after Little Bohemia and his supposed death?
Absolutely nothing in the files. either about Dillinger getting away or Hamilton getting away.
Yeah.
But not surprising.
I am just enthralled. This is great. I love this stuff. So, because I want to know, did Jack Hamilton have kids before he died?
You know, I don't know. He was known as Uncle Jack to Bruce Hamilton, was his name, who I talked to, his nephew. But I don't know if he had kids.
Because now we can use DNA to figure out if he did live, right? Like, assuming he lived and had a offspring, a child.
Right,
so,
right.
So we would you'd have to get DNA of Jack in order to do that. Yeah. Luckily, we have DNA of John, so we think we do, like the cufflinks that he died in. Oh, we'd like to get tested with DNA in between.
Have you talked to the Federal Bureau of Investigation about your research? And
I hit him up the other day. And they said, hey, Joe, good to hear from you again. No, I haven't talked to the FBI. No, I mean, Stuart, you know, Stuart's a retired FBI agent. He's our guy in terms of like interpreting all the stuff that FBI would do. But yeah, things are a little different now with the new incoming president. So, and I think having a conversation might not be a bad idea of all the times in the world.
And the new FBI director who knows, may be more amenable to puncturing myths.
Sure. Yeah, why not? Huh. I see Paul McAfee coming through, baby, coming through with the ideas. I love it. I love it. So one example of someone faking their death is Jack Hamilton. Are any of those family members still around? Do you know, are you connected to any of them in any way?
No, and I interviewed Bruce. I wrote my book like 25 years ago. So I interviewed Bruce. I didn't ask about any other family members, but it would be interesting to know if there are any family photos.
Yeah,
I didn't ask, but are there any family photos that it's like, yeah, there's Jack Hamilton eating a hot dog in the 1950s. That would be amazing.
That's insane. We've gone over in the podcast the picture of a supposed John Dillinger sending a selfie to himself to the Indianapolis Star. The guy sent it to four different places, right? And if you look, the selfie, it was taken in the 60s, right? And in the 50s, you know, the two of them would have been, you know, probably, you know, 50 years old, right? And so it would be interesting to see. I would love to see that in like a 1950s setting. There's Jack Hamilton with three fingers, you know, walking around eating a hot dog in St. Paul. Let's do this. The other theory that I wanted to ask you about was Jimmy Lawrence or James Lawrence, right? And a lot of people think that maybe he was somebody who stood in for John that night and was, but you want to talk about that specifically.
Well, just that, again, after reading the Dillinger files, I did not see anything substantive that indicated that anyone else was the corpse that was in the street on North Clark Street. You know, there's no question the gangs, and I refer to both the Dillinger gang and the Barker Karpus gang, they were doing their best to retire. Let's put it that way. They used acid to burn their fingers, which did not work very well, by the way. The whorls on your fingers are very, very hard to destroy. And you know, even the FBI itself alludes to a story, we'll just call it an FBI story, that Dillinger was hoping after the Biograph Theater to go to South America and, according to the FBI, be a rancher, which is kind of funny. I mean, he came from rural Indiana. But,
yeah, he hated his farm life, though.
He hated his farm life. Dillinger loved baseball. We know that. Great picture of him as a young man with baseball. No indication that he would be a great farmer in South America. But there are indications that obscuring their fingerprints, laundering the money, hoping that there was some end game other than death. But with Dillinger, you know, an estimated 1,000 to 2,000 people walked by his corpse. Four FBI agents guarded the corpse when it was brought to the coroner's office. I know there are alleged discrepancies, but at the same time, when the body cools, a corpse, things change, height, weight, eye color, etc. So, you know, my personal feeling is that it was Dillinger and not Jimmy Lawrence who was killed there. But you're absolutely right. DNA would clear it up quickly.
It is. It would eat away at a lot of the questions. Because and again, we have a direct line. Now, you know, from a familial line standpoint, right? It needs to be, from my understanding about DNA, sometimes it needs to be the maternal side as opposed to the paternal side. So like Mike, for example, we would use his sister because his sister would have the female DNA that his mom would have, that his grandma, which would be directly related to John. So anyway, we're working through that. And I agree. Is there one thing that you think stands out more than anything that's like, yep, that was John. No doubt. That's me. That's the one. That's the thing.
You know, there's no, other than the FBI and the coroner saying that the body on the slab was John Herbert Dillinger. I don't know of, other than DNA, I don't know of anything else that would absolutely preclude it being anybody else but John. So no, I can't think of it. Now you have to figure.
Well, Dillinger. I was saying your personal opinion.
Personal opinion is that John Dillinger died.
Sure.
In front of the biograph.
And is there anything specific in that thought that you're like, that's the tipping point for me about that was John?
It was very public. Dillinger was one of the most famous men in America. Now, I understand plastic surgery. Totally get it. But, you know, think if that's Brad Pitt. If that's
we can look at Zac Efron. Zac Efron looked a certain way, but it still was him.
There you go. Or of course Johnny Depp, who didn't look anything like John Dillinger, and frankly, not a great gangster movie. But anyways, yeah, sorry about that, Johnny or Michael Mann. But the fact is,
it was a love movie. It was a romance.
Exactly. But the fact is, he was next to maybe Babe Ruth, the baseball player. Dillinger was just about the most famous face in America at the time, but partially because of the FBI. They did newsreels. You'd go to see a movie, a Disney movie then, and they'd have 2 minutes about John Dillinger, newsreel footage. So he was so famous, it just boggles the mind that they wouldn't recognize it wasn't him. And if he did get away, other than maybe going to South America to ranch, that no one would see him. Now, mind you, there were Dillinger sightings. Just like today, there's Elvis Presley sightings.
Oh, Elvis lives, say, dude.
Elvis lives.
You don't have, yeah.
Exactly. I saw Elvis pumping gas. I saw Dillinger waiting on tables. But frankly, none of those I see is credible.
I love it. There is a pastor in the world right now that people say is Elvis, that he just left and now he's a pastor and he sings and it sounds just like him. There's a whole conspiracy theory around that. But this is great. Paul, I really appreciate your time in doing this,
so
man. I'm having a great time. I want to know more about St. Paul. Listen, we want to do more active investigations, right? Like we want to be able to go to St. Paul, and I'm not even kidding when I say this. I'm going to go out there with a metal detector and go out and try to find this money.
And by the way, the hat, the white straw boater hat.
Yeah.
We haven't talked about Homer Van Meter yet.
Yeah, Homer, and yeah.
A white straw boater that Homer Van Meter had on his head when he was shot to death, the Dillinger gang guy, Homer Van Meter, shot to death by the St. Paul police. They have it. with dry, it's kind of gross, but with dried blood and the signature, the autographs of the four police officers who shot that member of the Dillinger Gang dead in St. Paul, you could hold that hat in your hand. It's in the
main... You guys, my jaw just dropped because I can't, one, I want to do that, but two, that's ridiculous that they let them hold that such DNA evidence just in case.
Yeah, it is.
They don't need DNA for Homer. We all know what happened to him.
Exactly. So St. Paul, you know, the funny thing about St. Paul is people told me, well, the fix was in. It was called the O'Connor system after the police chief, John O'Connor. And he allegedly struck a deal which brought Al Capone moved to St. Paul for a while. Bugsy Siegel, who founded Las Vegas, came to St. Paul. The O'Connor system said you have to arrive at the railroad depot, which still stands today in downtown St. Paul. You have to identify yourself. Hi, my name is Joe. I love to rob banks. You'll give a bribe, you know, to the cop. You hand over a little bit of money. And then the cop will get you whatever you need. Do you need a place to stay? Do you need a woman? Do you, you know, whatever you need. So that
concierge, crime concierge service.
Yeah, exactly. And when I heard about this, because I'm from Boston, when I heard about this, I thought there's no way that the good people of St. Paul knew about this deal, the crooked deal. Well, how foolish I was. In the official St. Paul Police yearbook that you when you come back to Minnesota, you could get it at the library.
Yeah.
It's kind of musty and dusty. It describes the deal that the cops had with the criminals in detail. And it says, and I quote, as a result of our understanding with the criminal element, never before have the people of St. Paul been so safe and the virtue of our women so assured. I love that. But the police were watching for the virginity of the St. Paul women and welcoming the gangsters to our city. So the people of St. Paul knew it was not unusual to see John Dillinger walking in the street. He couldn't do that in New York. He couldn't do that in LA, but Dillinger could walk the streets knowing that he wouldn't be picked up.
Man, I love this.
By the way, that drove the FBI crazy.
Yeah, of course.
J. Edgar Hoover was nuts. Because he knew, moving from Dillinger to Ma Barker of the Barker Carpus gang, the St. Paul police got a tip that Ma Barker and her crazy boys, Freddie and Doc Barker, not sociopaths, that they were in a house, and the FBI were called. By the time the FBI got to the house, the St. Paul police had made sure that Ma Barker and the Barker Carpus gang had vamoosed. The food was still hot on the table when the FBI got there, but they were betrayed by the St. Paul police.
Interesting.
So you can see why Dillinger loved to come to St. Paul.
Are there any events that go on around Dillinger in St. Paul?
You know, we have Jesse James Days in Northfield, Minnesota. The commemoration of the slaughter of the Cole Younger, Jesse James gang. No, there is no public event. There's no plaques like historic markers.
Yeah. That's crazy.
There's a small museum in the St. Paul Police main headquarters that has Homer Van Meter's bloody hat.
Yeah, I'm holding that. Yeah,
you got to hold that. You got to photograph that. But no, I think St. Paul has always been uncomfortable with its dirty past.
Yeah.
Even though everybody from that era is dead, hundred years ago, I think people are embarrassed about it. Whereas, frankly, in Chicago, people love to go to the St. Valentine's Day Massacre site.
Yeah, no, there's tours all around Chicago. There's a couple crime tours that you can take up in Chicago. That are really good. That's interesting perspective. I wouldn't have guessed that. that a city would be against or kind of shy of their negative past.
And Joe, here's the people who aren't ashamed. I tracked down the son of Machine Gun Kelly.
Yeah.
So great name. You can't make it in gangsterdom without a name like Creepy Carpus, Babyface Nelson, or Machine Gun Kelly. So Machine Gun Kelly, George Kelly, was sent to prison for his role in a kidnapping, the Charles Herschel oil man kidnapping. So I talked to Machine Gun Kelly's son, and the son was kind of proud of his dad. Mind you, he only saw his dad in federal prison when he would visit him. And he told me that Machine Gun Kelly said, "Nah, you know what? They don't even know how many banks I really robbed." You know, he was like proud of being a bank robber, and his son still had affection for him. So I was always thinking that family members of gangsters would be embarrassed. I found the exact opposite.
Well, I would say that's a microcosm, maybe. And I would also say that we, you know, the Dillinger side, I'd say half and half, right? Like half find pride, some pride in it or interest in it. And the other half obviously doesn't and maybe feels embarrassed about it. We're doing great. We're kicking ass here and moving through. I'd love to have you back on. We'll talk about more of your research. Give us more insight into St. Paul, but I do want to get to Stuart's question because Stuart Fillmore texted me when I told him we were doing this podcast and he had a question, and his question for you is concerns some secret tunnels that were found under Harry Sawyer's farm. Sawyer owned a gangster hangout known as the Green Lantern Saloon outside of Chicago. The Green Lantern was like a gangster bulletin board. Years later, we have a Secret Service agent on our podcast. two secret tunnels were found on Sawyer's farm, and I thought it would be cool to go over both the Green Lantern property and the Sawyer Farm one with ground penetrating radar to see if anything's buried. So
that is a riot. So much of that is true. Harry Sawyer was the fixer. He would launder money. He would get you guns. He would let you know when a bank had more money. You know, it makes no sense to rob a bank when there isn't a lot of money in the vault.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Harry Sawyer was the guy who would go, "It's payroll day. There's going to be a lot of money in the bank. You ought to knock it over." So Harry owned the Green Lantern Saloon, not in Chicago, in St. Paul.
Oh, okay.
And in Alvin Creepy Carpus's autobiography, there's a whole page about how much Creepy Carpus loved the Green Lantern Saloon. Harry Sawyer's farm that you can go to, and I met the current owner. There is a tunnel. It's currently bricked up, I think, because of animals and stuff like that. But there was, and it still is, a tunnel that goes from the basement of the farmhouse into the woods. And it's pretty clear it was so that if the FBI came to arrest Harry Sawyer, and Harry eventually went to Leavenworth, I think, went to prison. But if they ever came there to arrest him, he'd go into the tunnel, get into the woods, and get the heck out of there. So that is totally, totally true.
Isn't that great? Isn't that freaking
great?
Now,
I have to tell you, when you do come to St. Paul, and we would welcome a visit, I'm sure the Vikings as well, there is a legendary tunnel that you'll have to try to find. It's under the main drag called Kellogg Boulevard. It kind of bisects downtown St. Paul. Big area. The Science Museum is there. That used to be where the brothels were.
Oh, okay.
And according to legend, and it's not, you can't dismiss it. According to legend, there is a tunnel that goes from the elite Minnesota Club, very fancy.
Sure.
Filet mignon.
Members only.
Under Kellogg Boulevard to the brothels. And allegedly, the men would excuse themselves from dinner, say, "Darling, I'll be back in 15 minutes. I just got to go out and smoke a cigar." They would go into the tunnel, go to the brothel, have their fun, come back and say, "I'm sorry, it It took me a little longer than I expected. I have never been able to find that tunnel, but apparently it's there.
No. Okay. Okay. Stuff continues. The investigation continues.
It just gets wider and wider.
I'm definitely not going to go to the brothel, but I'll definitely go to the tunnel and see if I can find it. This is great, Paul. Thank you. So the Green Lantern, that was a big hangout, is what we're saying.
It was a legendary hangout. Yeah.
What was so legendary about it?
I'll give you the exact words. Alvin Creepy Karpus, who wrote his autobiography with a journalist, Bill Trent or something like that. Karpus said it was, what did he say? He said, if you were looking for a guy that you hadn't seen for a couple of months, you thought of two places, prison or St. Paul. And by St. Paul, he meant the Green Lantern Saloon. It's where all the gangsters who came from other cities would get together. Apparently, Karpus loved the food, but it was really the clientele that...
Is the building still there?
No, unfortunately, it was torn down for, I think, the Science Museum. There is a guy who's got a photo of the inside of the Green Lantern, but... And Harry Sawyer owned it. There's no question. The irony is, you know, the underworld and the overworld in St. Paul were not separate. But Harry Sawyer had very close relations with many of the upstanding people of St. Paul, bankers, lawyers, etc. It was quite a corrupt city at the time.
Wow. We thought Indy was pretty bad. No, Indy was pretty clean. I mean, the whole system. So what we're going to do is I'm going to pause our interview. I'd like just again to say thank you. This is
thank
awesome.
Thank you, Bill. This was
do,
fun.
I have a feeling we'll have you back and we'll do some more. Cause I know there's going to be stuff that you're going to be like, I should have talked about that. We'll just have you back. It's easy. We can do it like this. And
Joe,
then
super.
Thank you, Paul. Okay, and then is there anywhere people other than Amazon can get your book, or do you want them to know to go anywhere?
Go to Amazon for John Dillinger Slept Here. I think it's like $20 in paperback or something like that. If any of you come arm to St. Leg. Paul, I'll autograph it.
Oh, okay. There we go. We're going to autograph book.
Another reason to come to St. Paul.
Yeah. All right, folks. So I'm going to stop, but you know, I say this every time, Paul, at the end of every podcast, you just got to keep digging.
Keep digging. Good luck. You find the DNA, I'll be the first in line to hear what you have to say.
I love it. All right, folks, we'll talk to you next time. Thanks for listening.
Joe. Keep digging.
The Digging Up Dillinger podcast is produced by Joe Melillo and Grace Hiles. Theme music produced by Eddie Bandis. Follow us on TikTok, Facebook, and YouTube. Until next time, keep digging.